That's important information for our primary care providers.
I think that's one of the fun parts about allergy.
The biggest challenge is making sure you have the correct diagnosis.
What is the best outcome or place to send this child?
This is Charting Pediatrics from Children's Hospital Colorado, where we examine the latest treatments for the most common complaints in pediatric medicine. And now your host, Dr. David Brumbaugh, pediatric gastroenterologist at Children's Colorado.
New studies from Germany, Norway, and the United States offer yet more data to show that childcare facilities in elementary schools should remain open or reopen to full-time in-person learning as quickly as possible. Despite these research findings, schools across the U.S. have largely been closed to in-person learning since the pandemic reached critical mass in the U.S. in March of 2020. On today's episode, we're going to talk through these recent studies and the advocacy needed to support the reopening of schools to full-time in-person learning. You can go back and listen to our previous coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic on seasons 3 and 4 of the podcast. Welcome to another episode of Charting Pediatrics. I'm your host, David Brumbaugh. If you're new with us, welcome to our pediatric provider community, where we release a new episode every Tuesday and special updates like this one to cover hot topics that are impacting our pediatric community. We are recording this episode on January 20th, 2021. Today, we are joined by returning guest Dr. Sean O'Leary, an infectious disease physician here at Children's Hospital Colorado and director of the Colorado Pediatric Practice-Based Research Network. Sean is also a spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics and can regularly be found being interviewed and quoted in the New York Times, C-SPAN, PBS, and CNN, to name a few. Tomorrow, Sean will have an editorial published in JAMA Pediatrics on the topic we are discussing today, the safe return to full-time in-person learning for elementary students. Sean, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, David.
You know, throughout the pandemic, you've been a regular here with us on the podcast to keep our listeners up to date with the development of the COVID vaccine and guidance on safe returns to school. There are now several papers out there demonstrating evidence of low viral transmission amongst elementary students and their teachers. Can you walk us through some of those recent studies and what we are learning from them?
Sure. I'll give brief overviews since I don't have them in front of me, but I can just give you the highlights. So there is one out of North Carolina, I believe from investigators from Duke, published in Pediatrics recently that essentially showed they looked at transmission patterns within North Carolina and including in schools and showed that essentially it was much more likely for children if they were to get infected in the community than to get infected in schools. So they showed very little transmission within the schools. That was study number one. There was another study published in the journal Eurosurveillance, which I think of as kind of like the European MMWR, that looked at transmission in schools in Norway. That one showed very little transmission within the schools in Norway. And interestingly, in that one, they were not using masks. They had some other mitigation measures in place, but they didn't use masks and still had very, very low transmission. The third recent study was published in a letter in the New England Journal out of Sweden. In that one, they also showed low transmission in schools, but importantly, they also looked at the health of children and showed fairly minimal health impact in children from their SARS-CoV-2 epidemic, which is not surprising. But they also looked at their teachers and showed actually lower rates of severe illness in the teachers than in the general population. So just a number of new recent studies really confirming what we've seen all along with schools.
So they looked at transmission amongst the students, but also to teachers as well. Because that was really, I think, the large concern, certainly in the first several months of the pandemic, especially with return to school in the spring, that you know teachers would potentially be at risk for transmission from asymptomatic kids, right?
Yeah, and we've seen that in other studies as well. There have been a number of other studies showing very low transmission student to teachers. You know, that most of the transmission among teachers has been, if it happens in the school, has been staff to staff rather than student to staff, or just a cluster of cases among teachers who have gotten it out in the community.
And did those studies look at different ranges of ages of kids? Were they focused on one population?
Most of them are looking at the younger ages because a lot of the high schools, particularly in the U.S., there hasn't been a lot of in-person learning.
Nothing to study.
Yeah, not much to study. But there have been some that suggest fairly low transmission there as well, and that in the students that are getting infected in the secondary schools where infection rates are higher among students, they're getting it outside of school. They're not getting within the schools. And that's anecdotally what we're seeing here in Colorado for sure, that there are these students when mitigation measures are in place in school, not much transmission outside of the school, significant transmission because of, you know, all the things that kids in high school do when they get together.
So let's take the data from these studies and what we've learned, and let's hold that for a second and consider the question of vaccination of educators and how that is looking across the country over the course of the next several months. What can we expect in terms of timing?
Well, so the big issue with vaccinating as we speak on January 21st, 2021, is the supply issue right now. So there's, you know, of course, there's the distribution issues, which it's been a problem, and we can talk about that if you want. But really, in a lot of places, the supply is the issue. And so moving into these essential workers, teachers, et cetera, we might be a little ways off because of simply supply issues. We're not getting as much vaccine as needed. So for Colorado, the plan is to start, there have been some teachers vaccinated already, but the plan is to start vaccinating around March 1st after we get all of the other phase 1A, phase 1B providers, healthcare workers, 70 plus vaccinated to then move into the essential workers with teachers high up on that list.
So we're really looking at, you know, by the time that most educators get their second dose, we're well into the spring. And so not much actual school year remaining.
Right, right.
So knowing what we know then from those studies about transmission and what we can anticipate in terms of teachers getting vaccinated, if we want our kids to get back to school with any appreciable time left in the school year, we're going to have to get kids back to school before teachers are fully vaccinated and educators are vaccinated.
That's right. I mean, it's you know, we're in a tough situation. There are no perfect solutions here, but I think the accumulating evidence, and you mentioned the JAMA Pediatrics editorial, the point I make there is that, you know, it's not all of the accumulating evidence really shows that the likelihood of transmission, particularly from younger children to others, is pretty low. And we have to take that evidence and we have to use it to say we need to have our children in schools. We've talked on this podcast before about all the downsides, and I think all of your listeners are well aware of the downsides of having children out of school. And I think the majority of policymakers, I think everyone is really in favor of getting kids into school, weighing all the pros and cons on either side. And in fact, a lot of the larger districts have made that move to get kids into school, at least K through 5, or in many cases, K through 8, getting those kids back into school. And I think that's a good thing.
So we feel that the overall risk for teachers is low based on the studies that we discussed, and the overall transmission events, even around among children, are low. So the real risk to other family members of kids bringing home infection seems to be probably not a lot greater than exists just by being out in the community.
It's probably less than being out in the community.
Probably
I mean,
less,
that's
yeah.
That's what we're seeing is that, you know, kids are probably more likely to be infected in the community than they are in school.
So as we're thinking about our roles in our community over the next few months as pediatricians, as child health providers, what is it going to take from an advocacy standpoint to really not just get schools to go back to in-person learning, but stay, you know, knowing that transmission rates in the community are going to wax and wane over the next few months, right? We're going to see spikes, we're going to see improvement, but we need schools to hang in there. So how do we message that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think we can talk at a very local level. We can also talk more at a national level. And at the local level, I think just being involved with your, you know, as pediatricians, being involved with your child's school to the extent that you can, being in touch with the principal regarding those, you know, the policies they have at the school. And then, of course, working at the district level if you can, if you have contacts. And then, you know, we've been talking for a long time about really trying to keep up collaborations between the medical community and the education community to try and keep those lanes open. And you know, we've been trying to maintain that throughout this with, you know, I think varying success. You know, and certainly at the regional level, state level, you know, working, having pediatric voices at the table in these discussions with the districts, as well as the local and state health departments regarding these policies. And that's been going on all along in Colorado, and I think to varying degrees in other states as well. I think the big point, though, at the national level is, as I said, it's January 21st. We had a major change in leadership, right? And the prior administration really pushed for opening of schools for, it seemed like at the time, kind of economic reasons, but didn't really give any kind of a plan or any kind of support for how that could happen. President Biden and his administration really seemed committed to a plan and also a lot of money going to schools to be able to support all the mitigation measures that we're asking of them.
So, yeah, strong messaging from a federal level, from a state level as well. It's state leadership is important too. Sean, I know there's so much uncertainty in 2021. I don't feel like things feel a whole lot more secure than they did in 2020. But until I know I'm at risk of throwing you into difficult times by asking you to predict what's going to be happening 6 months from now. But I think, you know, we talked about the spring, then we get to the summer. Based on what you are forecasting in terms of vaccine uptake, getting closer to herd immunity, what do you think school looks like in the fall of 2021 for kids returning? Does it look different?
Well, I am sure hoping that things are normal in school, like essentially as normal as, you know, like pre-pandemic. I think that might be pushing it. I don't think we're probably going to be there by then. That's a best case scenario. But I do think, I do have a lot of reason to hope that all kids will be in school, but we may have mitigation measures in place still with masking, that kind of thing. We'll have more information about, do we actually need masks in school? Because as I mentioned, in Norway, they actually were not masking and they had very low transmission. And so we'll have more studies between now and then saying, do we have to do that? So that's one thing. And then, you know, in terms of herd immunity and all those other aspects, so many variables out there, it's hard to predict. I think we're going to see, I'm optimistic we're going to see a higher uptake than what you're hearing about in the surveys right now. I think right now, there's certainly a demand problem, or not a demand problem, there's a supply problem. At some point, we may cross that threshold where we have plenty of supply and not enough demand, in which case that's where a lot of the messaging comes out. But I'm not even sure we're going to get there because everybody wants to get past this pandemic. As we get more and more information out there that these vaccines are safe, that they're effective, and we see, you know, the hints of a return to normalcy among those who have been vaccinated, I think more and more people are going to want these vaccines.
Hey, I know there's three kids in my house that would be happy to wear a mask as long as they can get into school.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a group of small kids that don't even know what it's like to be in school without a mask.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So what we remember as the pre-pandemic normal will be abnormal to them, right?
Yeah.
So, well, Sean, thanks so much for spending time with us and for this update on what's happening in schools.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah, we'll have you back soon.
If you have more questions on this topic or a suggestion for a future podcast topic, write to chartingpediatrics@childrenscolorado.org. If you like this podcast, please rate us and share with others who might be interested. This is a production of Children's Hospital Colorado.